Pull over, lean in. It's time for the Soft Shoulder Podcast. I am your host, Danette Relic of Radical Creative Sanctuary, inviting spaciousness for your mind and your heart. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. The Soft Shoulder is your time. Your time to slow down and fuel up on self-love support, so you can make the most of your gorgeous life. Join me here. Everyone needs a soft shoulder. Hello, sweet listener. Welcome back to the Soft Shoulder. There's been a party going on Instagram. Maybe that's how some of you found me. If anyone has been doing Susanna Conway's The August Break, this is the 10th year in a row she's been hosting a month of mindfulness, photos, and community via prompts. These single words to help guide something that you want to notice and be mindful about and share in the month of August. I was ready for that. I kind of stumbled into it. I was like, oh, I could really use this guidance. And it's been a really beautiful experience so far. There's been some wonderful new people that I've come into contact with. Maybe you're one of those people. Welcome. And if you're interested, of course, and you're on Instagram and you like that kind of thing, just the hashtag August Break 2018. That'll help you find your way there to Susanna Conway's wonderful hosting of this this monthly, I don't know if it's a challenge, it's just a wonderful thing. I also want to say that if you're one of those people that feels like, oh, but it's mid-August, I didn't start at the right, it's okay. You can do one, right? I mean, it's there and it's a community and it's beautiful. I know so many of these creative challenges can come with this idea of we have to do it perfectly and check all the boxes. And as much as I love checking off all the boxes, it's also really nice to remember what's the bigger picture here. And, you know, if there's one prompt that really moves you, jump in, connect with other people, take a look around. You actually don't even have to post any of your own photos to enjoy seeing what other people are sharing on that hashtag. So welcome. If that's how you found me, please, if you haven't seen it, go for it if it's something that interests you. And just the same with a creative challenge, a hashtag, blah, 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 self-care. How many of us feel like we want to check off all the boxes? We want the morning routine, we want, you know, good boundaries, we want to have like self dates once a week, we want to do all these things that we think we're supposed to be doing, and we fall off or fall out, it doesn't quite feel enough. If you notice yourself doing that, this is a sign. Just pause. All of that judgment, you know, at the end of every podcast episode, I didn't plan to, but I've just started saying, you are someone worth loving. That's not conditional based on how many times you did your laughter yoga or whatever. It's that's just the truth. And you can jump in, you can show up, you can keep coming back to yourself. That is the practice of self-love. So today, speaking of self-love, I have to say, one of the many windows, some people just kind of come to this work on their own. They like it, they're attracted to it. For some of us, there's a lot more resistance. And for some of us, it takes a bit of an emergency, a little bit of the universe, you know, whispering, then poking us in the ribs, then tap, tap, tapping at our window, and then screaming, and then breaking the window, and then throwing pies at us. Like, we just takes a little while for us to realize and come to the fact that it all starts with us, and self-love is important. And this is something worth investing in, and this is something worth spending time on, and that we are worth spending time on. So for so many people, self-love is something that that shows up through breakups. I see this all the time. Perhaps that's how you got here. You know, it's wow. I mean, where to begin with romantic comedies and how the culture that we grow up in, the emphasis on coupling, you know, the classic You Complete Me, Jerry Maguire, this whole myth about all that stuff. So sometimes, you know, if all of that's going well, it can be really easy to not think about self-love very much. It's like, oh, well, I've got this great partner. Everything's working out for me. I'm loved. We complete each other. This is great. And we don't really have to think about anything. Perhaps it's all just kind of moving along swimmingly. And when that gets disrupted, it can be really devastating. There's so many different ways. I think it's important to... Now, I have a lot of things to say about breakups. And as many of you may know, I've been writing a book about breakups for a while. There's lots more coming. Today, I want to introduce you to the Seven Houses of Heartbreak, which is something I have... These are houses I have stumbled into. I have squatted in. I have renovated. I've spent a lot of time in these seven houses. And I'm going to introduce that to you and invite you to... explore where you might be and where you have been, where maybe you currently aren't right now. But I wanted to start by saying that comparing breakups. So, you know, I just gave the example of, oh, things were great and you had a nice long-term happy relationship and then there's a breakup. But heartbreak can happen in so many ways. And we don't all have the same kinds of relationships. I don't believe that the length of a relationship trumps the length of another. I've known people who their heart has broken so deeply and profoundly after a 6-week relationship, more so than someone coming out of like a 6-year relationship. It's not helpful for us to compare breakups. It's not helpful for us to compare pain, period. It actually doesn't help anyone. We're all on this journey together as individuals. And, you know, if you see a baby, say that there's a baby in a high chair and they've got maybe a little, a crayon or something, and they drop it and then they freak out, like just freak out. They were in the middle of something and now they can't reach the crayon and they're having a complete meltdown. And we might, as adults, we might look at this baby and go, "Oh, look at little so-and-so. That's so cute. Oh, it's okay." And we're calm because we know this is no big deal. It's a crayon. We're going to get the crayon back. But to the baby, little baby so-and-so. Could you imagine if that was your name? So-and-so relic. Oh, God. Anyways, so little baby so-and-so, that is a crisis for that child, right? Like, that is the biggest... everything. It's melting down because in the baby so-and-so's world, that is, it's terrifying. It's loss, it's disappearance, it's disruption. It's all these things are happening. They're real for the baby and for that baby's experience. And maybe a baby is a bad example because it, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, if we're experiencing pain that we're in any way immature. What I'm saying is that our experiences are real, period. And comparing that baby's pain, trying to be logical about how, you know, a broken leg might be more than a dropped crayon, it doesn't help anyone. It doesn't help the person with the dropped leg, the broken leg, and it doesn't help the person with the dropped or broken crayon. So no matter where you are, this is for you. So a funny story about the breakup book, which is called Crash Bloom. It will be coming out. I know. You know what's funny is I, okay, I'll just tell you. So I have, as you may know or may have guessed, I am a breakup expert because I have been through many of them very consciously. And yes. So at some point, so I'd read a lot of breakup books, self-help books, heartbreak books. And with many of the transitions in my life, I would go to books. I would go to podcasts. I would go to books. I'd be looking for that medicine. Music was my medicine cabinet. It was just like, okay, I need the thing. I need the message. I need some comfort and some guidance. And at some point, I forget which breakup it was. It doesn't matter. But I had I was in a library of my new neighborhood, and I was looking for the book that was going to save me, kind of with the passion of like, I need a life preserver. I felt like I was just flopping around in the choppy waters. I'm like, I need something to hang on to. And I had a very clear idea of what I wanted that to be. So while I'm sitting crying, as who hasn't done that in the library, sitting on the floor, looking through the self-help section, I really wish I had like some video footage of these times in my life, but the memories are pretty vivid anyways. I was looking at them and I found, you know, the what I call the pink sassy books, you know, the ones, and the giant books about past lives and really in-depth stuff about, you know, contracts and heartbreak and all this stuff. And then the psychological textbooks, and I just was moving through them all, and they didn't, it was sort of like I was is it Goldilocks? Yeah, this one's too hot, this one's too cold, this is just right. I couldn't find it. I was just like looking around for my right fit, and I knew that none of these were it. And so you know, I was in a miserable mood, of course, because I was devastated, and this was a breakup in a series of pretty big breakups and life transitions. So I was a little miserable. And I was, you know, then I had a new thing to complain about. It was like, there's no good books. What is this? Like just complaining, bitching, moaning, complaining, all this stuff. And I realized as I was journaling, and I was like, why isn't there a book that, you know, honors the fact that these relationships were chosen? Why isn't there a book that, you know, allows me to have the feelings that I'm feeling and move forward? Why is there a book that like respects my choices and doesn't diminish me or my chosen partners as some kind of trope or stereotype, and, you know, something practical, something fresh, something real, all these things. I had all these ideas, and I realized, well, Danette, if you know exactly what was supposed to be in that book, maybe it's you who should be writing that book, because I knew exactly what I wanted the table of contents to be. And so at that time, I started writing a blog. I mean, I had a blog, but I revived it, and I thought this would be hilarious. I thought this would be one blog post. No. So then quickly it became a series of blog posts, and I had so many ideas. I had this huge list of blog posts, and I was really interested in this, and I really loved writing it. It was wonderful. And then, oh, look at that. I fell in love again. And who the hell wants to write a breakup blog when you're just, everything's fine now? So I dropped it. And sure enough, you know, time passes, another breakup happens, back I am with these blog posts, and you know, began to put together what is now in its third draft, Crash Bloom, a breakup survival book by myself. So why is this not completed? So that's not really helpful. I've been trusting the process. I've also, in addition to my practice here, I'm a writing coach at Firefly Creative Writing. I help people with their creative work as well, specifically with their writing projects. And with this project, I have just really trusted the process. There was, because of the subject matter, there was... if I had finished it when I first started writing it, it would be a really different book, because the second breakup after I had started blogging was so different from the one that had initiated that spark of idea. And I learned so much more, and I thought, oh yeah, this is great. This needs to be in the book. So I do trust the process, while also noting the importance of not, you know, making your creative project a lifelong project and never actually launching it, birthing it into the world. So last February, Firefly Creative Writing in Toronto had an open mic night with the theme of like love lost or love found, or I forget. But yes, you know, the good stories, the bad stories about heartbreak and love. And I brought a segment of my book to read. And I did something that I had never done before. I know some coaches, some people say if you have a goal, you have to declare it publicly and that will hold you accountable and you have to have a date and you have to tell everyone. And I have mixed feelings about that. I think having a date and a goal and a specific goal, I'm all over that. But the whole declaring it to the public thing, I think that there's a little more nuance to that. So I had never really done this before, but for some reason on Valentine's Day of 2018, I announced to everyone before reading my piece that my book was going to be out in June. I had no idea how, but it was going to happen. And literally like 2 hours later, 3 hours later, I'm laying on my back on the sidewalk on the ice, having smashed my head on the sidewalk, which gave me a concussion, which led to post-concussion syndrome. So I have this brain injury, which affects my executive functioning and all kinds of things. You know, what's not happening is writing and editing the final draft of a book. So that's where this is right now. But I can share with you still. The point of the book is to share my experiences, my wisdom, to put the book out into the world that I had wished was there. While I still am very excited about the day that book comes out, today I can still share with you and help you and offer you The Seven Houses of Heartbreak, which has come out of that process. I'm going to do right now. So, you know, this doesn't have to be a recent heartbreak. One thing I've learned about over the years is this idea of a timeline, obviously for creative projects, but also the timeline for, you know, healing our hearts, the timeline for getting over someone, that idea of like, you know, there's a mathematical formula. That's one of the chapters in the book. Because mathematical formula for getting over your breakup. Perhaps you've heard some, like half the time of the relationship is a how long, or, you know, or just in general, it should be 6 months or whatever. There's all of these kinds of theories out there about how long it should take, as though you can measure this, as though that's how hearts work, as though that's how emotions work. I mean, I have seen people get over something, and I don't even want to say get over it, it's move through it, like fully release it, fully heal it for real, with like in no time. Like they were doing this work subconsciously for so long, and then all of a sudden it was just gone so much faster than they thought, where it's almost like suspicious, like, am I really, I should be more sad, but I'm not. Have you had a breakup like that or a loss like that? You know, sometimes that can happen too with, you know, going through, not always for sure, but sometimes when we're a loved one, someone we know has an illness and we know that we're going to say goodbye to them at some point sooner than we had thought. Sometimes so much of the grieving is done in that preparation time. And there's a sense of like release and freedom, a surprise that it was harder before in some ways. That's obviously a lot more complicated as well. But what I mean is to just shine a light on that it's not something that can be measured, and it's not something that's logical. And sometimes it's not even something we're aware of. So because of this, you know, I think that many of us are what I call half-healed hearts. So even though your breakup might have been way in the past, a particular one, and maybe your most recent breakup is fine, but there's a breakup that happened like 8 years ago and you're like, that one's still kind of, just never really healed. I think a lot of us are half-healed hearts. We don't know how to really, really move through it. We try to, like, you know, even the language is get over it, jump over it. Skip it, move on, replace it with something else. And moving forward is so important. I have been having, you know, this new crush on my future lately. Yes, moving forward, taking action. This stuff is important. It's not, I don't mean about like wallowing in the past, but if we're not fully feeling it and allowing it to, allowing ourselves to have the experience, the full experience, then oftentimes the healing doesn't really happen. So, you know, if you're listening thinking, oh, no, I'm good, I'm in a really, I'm happy now, I'm fine, just keep listening because there might be something here for you too. And if not for you, someone that you know and love. I have to say, ever since I started that blog, I think it was called The Beautiful Breakup Series, and I started it, and since then, so many people that I know who were in relationships that I admired that seemed very, you know, stable, healthy, wonderful, not anything that anyone saw coming, those relationships came to an end. And I've had, I can't count how many people have come to me said, finish your book already, which is very encouraging. But of course, they're coming to me at a moment where they're like, I need this and I need you and I didn't see this coming. So if not you, dear listener, someone that you know is in a relationship that's ending or had a relationship that ended and maybe could use more support than they realize, the more that we can understand one another, the better we're able to support each other and the people that we care about. I recently had this experience with a friend who I had recommended a book on Instagram called Brain Lash. It's a book about mild traumatic brain injury. And I had recommended this in also in a story that I shared on a site run by Molly Parker, who educates people and connects people who are healing from concussion and brain injuries. But I'd mentioned this book, Brain Lash, and suggested that it was just a great thing for people to read if a loved one had a brain injury, because if you have a brain injury or a broken heart, there's a lot going on. And it's a lot of work to be in those states, and you don't need the extra work of educating people around you how to understand and all of that stuff. So it's great for people to read it. And I found out that a friend recently was reading it, and maybe there are more people in my life reading that book. But really, no one that I had really known had actually picked it up and was like really putting in the effort to have conversations with people who had brain injuries, to, you know, all without telling me about it, all without asking me about it. And it meant so much to me. And it felt like it was it's such a way that you can support someone by learning about what they might be going through, not presuming that you know, because all breakups are different, all brain injuries are different. Amazingly, my work in breakups has been very helpful with my brain injury. That metaphor, it just maps on so beautifully. So yes, so there's something here for everyone is my point. Why is it seven houses of heartbreak instead of, you know, there's lots of different frameworks, often called, you know, stages of grief, levels of whatever. And mine is called houses. It's called that for a reason. Because I believe that we occupy these spaces. We live in healing stages. It's not something that's happening to us. And it's not a level. It's not a checklist. It's a space that we occupy. And when we look at it this way, it separates us from the stage that we're in. So like, we are not broken, we are still whole, but we are moving through these houses of heartbreak. And if you're anything like me, your atmosphere has a big impact on how you feel and how you see the world. I know, you know, when I have a desk by a window, it changes everything. When I have natural light and a big spacious table, my mind is more easily opened. I think bigger. When I'm looking at nature, I think about nature. It has an impact on how I think and how I feel. And if you've ever been in like a waiting room of some kind that's really inhospitable and sterile and grungy and neglected, it can make that experience If you're waiting for tender news, you probably remember those details of the discomfort, of the sticky chair, of the dust bunny in the corner, of the neglect. It's like you're in a space, in a very vulnerable place, say a doctor, a medical waiting room of some kind. And it's, it has an impact. It doesn't change the news, that you might receive or not receive. But, you know, I think all of those little finishing touches where we bring beauty, where we bring comfort. I remember being at a funeral home one time and, you know, they had Kleenex everywhere, everywhere within arm's reach because they knew, you know, and they have like just the having warm coffee or having a, you know, these a chair and a place for someone who just wants to be slightly away from everyone else. Like that intention of the space, we live in it all the time. I mean, our world is designed. It's designed for a very specific person. It's not designed for everyone. And we see the impact of this all the time, right? In terms of if you're able-bodied, the world is designed for you in many ways. And for a lot of us, it's not. And that has a huge impact on us. So I think a lot about spaces. And that's why I've named these stages houses. So just like the spaces and unlike stages, you know, we move through them differently. So even though I have them numbered and there's seven, because I like that number, and it just sort of happened organically, it doesn't mean that you start in house one and then graduate and move to house two. It's not like a school system. This is just like our hearts. This is something more organic. You might kind of come into house three. You might kind of move back to house two. You might spend a lot of time in house six. You might never be in house one. We might go back and forth, moving around. That's how this is designed. That's what the houses are all about. So you get to decide, and the heart will decide where you're going to be. And as I say in the book, there is a tide, not a tidiness, to hearts. So let go of any idea that the stages are going to be logical or linear, but I'm going to introduce them to you now. And as you listen to them, see if you can remember a time where you've been in one of those houses. See if you're in one of those houses now. If you're going through a breakup right now, I want you to kind of like guess and see, but it would be really interesting for you to also notice if you don't think that you're heartbroken at all, are you maybe still in one of these houses? Who knows? Okay. So the seven houses of heartbreak. Here we go. House one, shatter and shock. Devastated, disbelief, dust. Life as you know it has changed dramatically. You are not sure how you are even functioning. This is as broken as your heart gets. In the chaos, you might entertain delusions or denial as a form of relief. You are just taking in the scene as it unfolds. You need help, but aren't yet sure what that means. Is this really happening? So shatter and shock, this is a house that maybe you know. I know this house. This is sort of when you didn't see it coming. Or even if you did see it coming, you could not have predicted how it would feel. It's that just complete, like, what? I have been in a few car accidents. If you have also, it's that, you know, it's similar to that. I think I probably drew upon those experiences metaphorically for this. It's like slow motion. You're watching, you're witnessing, you're just there. And everything is changing and, yeah. Shatter and shock. It's there for a reason. The shock is a protective thing. That's the first house. Along with the seven houses of heartbreak, I have a healing priority. This is a guide in case you notice that you're like, okay, great, Danette, I'm in here. Now what? Thanks. Feeling awful. Okay. So healing priority. Getting through the day. Witnessing your experience, remembering to breathe. yes, that's actually the healing priority, and that is enough, because when you are in the first house of heartbreak, getting through the day is an incredible accomplishment. So that is house one. House number two, seeking sanctuary. Sedated, numb, but functional. You've moved away from the crash site, but not too far. You may feel fine, though you know you probably shouldn't. You are keeping busy, possibly productive. You have a sinking feeling that when the thaw comes, it's going to get ugly, and you're going to need shelter. So I think houses one and two are often very close together. I don't know what your experience has been. To me, there's a very quick shift there from shatter and shock to seeking sanctuary. Because in seeking sanctuary, there's still that numbness. There's still that separation. There's still, but you're starting to be able to move. And you have enough knowledge now to be like, okay, I got to get myself somewhere safe. So the healing priority is making space for your imminent healing. This is where it's starting to settle in. You're creating space for it. That means setting up support systems. That means getting ready to start listening, even if your heart isn't ready to start talking. These are the healing priorities. Getting ready to start listening, even if your heart is not ready to start talking just yet, and making space for your healings and setting up support. Right? So this might be, work, friends, communication. If you know you're going to be checking out, you know you're going to be a little off grid, you need the people or a person, people in your life to, someone needs to know about it. Maybe you can start to delegate a little bit. Maybe you can make requests. It's going to be different for everyone depending on our needs and our life circumstances. So that's house number two. And house number three, surfacing and story. So this is where the numbness is wearing off and it hurts. You are exhausted and it seems like the work is just beginning. The totality of your losses are starting to emerge. Stories emerge in layers that may be overwhelming. All the tiny bruises and hairline cracks are coming into focus, and your heart is trying to make sense of them all. You know, so this is when like the shatters happen, the shock's wearing off. Maybe your friends, some people know what has happened to you. You've got some space. Somehow you've created this. And this is where it's like, so some feelings starting to come up, trying to make sense of it all. Things are coming to the surface. The stories are coming to the surface. And I think one of there's a moment in a breakup where we realize that a shared story has now become two. And that's what I mean by this surfacing of story, because there's something really disorienting. You know, you might be a couple who's just, oh, let's tell them how we met, blah, blah, blah. And it's you tell them. No, you tell them. And there's this shared narration. Maybe that's not you really, Chipper. Maybe your story was a little like, oh God, how did we end up together? I don't know. But there is some kind of agreed upon story. And now those stories are going to change. You don't have control over what the other person's story is. They might be rewriting those last 6 years or 6 months or however long. And you might be doing the same. This is a little disorienting. So that's house three. And the healing priority here for you, self-compassion. Self-compassion, gentle reflection. Taking stock of the lost and harvesting your heartbreak story. So there is healing in this. There's beauty in harvesting the story. And, you know, for the healing priority, the self-compassion is number one, because this is painful, this is messy, this is uncomfortable, and it will take time. It's going to take time. House of heartbreak number four, sob, stitch, and sling. This is where you roll up your sleeves. You are deep in the work of recovering, and it's not pretty. Emotions need release. Ugly thoughts need to erupt, and it's a mess. You might say things that are edgy, angry, and bitter. Some days this work feels good, even powerful. Other days it feels like reluctant, laborious survival. Until now, much of your bravery has gone unseen. So this is where, you know, we're in house three. There's some surfacing. There's some story. Things are starting to thaw and feel. This is where, you know, shit hits the fan, basically. This is the whole carnival of emotions. I loved, what's that movie? Diane Keaton has an incredible scene in a movie where she's going through a breakup. You know what? I remember the name, but I'll just leave that out so it's not a spoiler. See if you can know what movie this is. But there's a scene where she's going through a breakup and they show her when she finally hits house four and she just bursts like a dam. She's just bawling. She's a mess. She was holding it together. She was maybe, probably in like number house one, house two. Maybe a really functional house two, I would say, up until this point. And then she just goes launching into house four and is crying. But the montage of this is like you see her crying. It's a big, ugly breakup cry. And it's, you know, moving and comical. But boy, they just stretch that scene out. It's like scene after scene after scene after scene of her crying and not stopping. And I loved it. I was like, this is what happens. This is so real. This is so, you know, cathartic to watch Diane do it. It's not fun when you're the one doing it, but I think a lot of us have. So this is, that's tears, but it could also be anger. It could be anything, any just blah, emotions are coming up. Stuff is coming up and it's messy. So this house is particularly difficult for those of us who like to have our shit together, right? This house is particularly difficult when we want to seem okay, when we want to be okay. Not just seem okay, but we just want to be okay. We just want things to work. We want things to be all right. It's hard to be a mess, but this is part of it. These emotions are in there and they need a place to go. They need to be seen and expressed and moved on and moved out, right? So this is what happens in house four. The healing priority is permission to be a mess. Give yourself that permission. I'm giving it to you. If you're there now, just be a big, gross mess, okay? Healing priority, trusting the work even when it feels like it's getting worse. Expressing the messy emotions. So, you know, sometimes when we're having that big ugly cry or the big rage or whatever it is, it's like, oh, it might seem that I was better when I was in house one or two or even three because I was, you know, I was composed and I was palatable and I could go to work and everything was fine. And everyone was fine. Fine. Capital F, fine. But that's not the case. So it might feel like it's getting worse because it's gotten messy. It's like, I thought you were fine and now you're crying. But this is progress, okay? It was there all along. Just because it was numbed and frozen up in you, that doesn't mean that it wasn't there. It means that now that you've moved into this house, you are finding the courage to allow yourself the experience, okay? So permission to be a mess. Expressing what's here. That's house number four. House number five. I love house number five. Self takes the wheel. So you are owning your transition now. It may still be sad and messy and volatile at times, but you are on it. You are fueled by a new energy, perhaps feeling creative urges. You notice a waking desire to actively reclaim or instigate changes on your own. You can feel how proud you are of how far you've come in this healing work, even as some stitches come loose unexpectedly. This is an eclipse of power and vulnerability. Now, of course, you can see why I love this house. the feelings are still there. They're still, you know, you still might be kind of having some overnights in the other houses, spending a weekend in house four, having lunch in house two, all that stuff. But this is where, you know, in the, you know, the breakup movies, this is that reinvention stage, right? This is when, like, you know, you might buy some new clothes. This is when the breakup haircut often happens. This is where, you know, and even these creative activities might not be the best long term. Some of them are a little self-destructive sometimes. Sometimes that's just where you need to start. It's really all about the creative energy. It's really all about you, like the house says, taking the wheel. And, you know, when you're taking a wheel and the wheel's kind of all over the place, it's sometimes it's hard, right? It's like, you know, your arm like, whoa, like the car's out of control. You got to constantly be readjusting it. It's like I said, it still might be messy. But yeah, this is where maybe some hope comes in as well. Healing priority in house five, celebrating your courage. Because up until now, there's been so much work that maybe you've shared with people. Maybe you've kept it to yourself. Maybe you haven't been aware you've been doing it. Maybe you've been surviving for so long, holding it in, coping. It takes a lot out of us. If you've reached this stage, that means you've been doing a lot of this other work. And so, yes, it's part of healing. Celebrate your courage. Own this experience. Engage with your creativity. You know, you might pick up an instrument you haven't picked up before, return to something, take a new class, just whatever, something creative, cooking, whatever it is. That's house five. House number six, surging and staging. The light is different in your heart now. You've done a lot of healing, but you're not all the way through just yet. You can see the horizon, but sometimes get frustrated to still be navigating the roadblocks. You want to move on. Closure is a word that still nags at you like a splinter. You are surging forward and setting the scene for a future you aren't sure you believe in just yet. This house is particularly important. It often is not given the attention it deserves as its own space. But I have to tell you, I think this might be the house I've spent the most time in. And it's a challenging one for me, perhaps not for you at all. This will be different for everyone. But this is, and I have to say, I believe a lot of people are living here. A lot of half-healed hearts are living here because the other houses are a little more obvious, the shock and the rage and all that kind of stuff. But in house six, you could easily be in a new relationship. You could easily be just living your life and thinking everything's fine. And maybe years have gone by and for the most part you are. But that, like I use the splinter metaphor because sometimes there's just something under the skin, or if something comes up, or a song or a time, or it's not quite there. You know that it's not quite there. And maybe it's showing up in your new relationship. Maybe there's a little more protectiveness. Maybe you're not really giving yourself over the way you used to. And maybe that's okay. But maybe you're not really happy about that. You know, maybe you miss being able to just give of yourself with the kind of abandon that you did before you were hurt. So that's house number six. These, I use the word surging. It's like there's these big movements forward, and staging. It's like, oh, like, you know, we're setting up this place. This is the house of someone who's got their shit together and who's over the breakup. And that's really important to do. And there's a difference when, you know, when we call it staging, right? There's like, there's an intention. There's something we're putting effort in here in stage house six. House six has effort. The healing priority here then is navigating your new heart muscles, considering what you need to still let go of, getting clear about who you are becoming in all of this. So there's nothing wrong with this. I think, you know, a part of what stops us in all self-love practices and all personal growth work is the judgment of whatever happened up until now. I had a discussion with a client recently who's having huge breakthroughs and huge realizations about the way she wants to live her life. Big stuff. She's really, really stepping in, really showing up, really ready to make these changes in her life. And I have been there, and I think you have been there. And how easy is it then to show up realizing what we want and then go, oh my God, why wasn't I doing this before? Who saw that one coming, right? How many times have you said that? Like, why didn't I do this sooner? It doesn't matter why you didn't do it sooner. It just really doesn't. What matters is now you know what you want. Now you know who you are. Now things have aligned and you're ready for it now. You might not have been ready for it then. We develop in stages. We can definitely add some speed to that by being more conscious about our personal growth work. As I mentioned in episode 5, working with a coach obviously speeds that kind of stuff along, and we can move forward. But looking into the past and wondering why we didn't, it's not a useful exploration. And so when you're in house 6 here with the surging and the staging, I think it's common to say, like, what? Why can't I just let go of this? Why does that song still make me cry? Why, you know, when I see their picture on Facebook, like, why does that still bug me? Even though I'm in a happy relationship, it can be confusing. It sounds a little weird. You don't need to judge yourself for that. This is information now that you have. You're like, ah, okay. Self-compassion. You have a new heart muscle. Where does it need conditioning? What is it that you want to feel? What is it that still hasn't quite been let go of? This is a place to be celebrating, because if you're in house 6, you've done so much of the work and now there's just like a little bit, right? Just a little bit left over. Probably, you know, it's the harder part, you know, like if any of you have done the KonMari method of tidying up, it's designed in such a way where the hardest things to let go of in your decluttering process are left to the end for a reason. And so that's sort of like this in house 6. You know, you've had all these other houses, you've taken the wheel, you've been doing all this work, and now what's left? It's there for a reason. It might be really tender. Maybe you couldn't see it buried under all the other things, okay? So be kind to yourself here. And be very patient with yourself here. Be curious about it. It's nothing that you need to fix. Take a look at it. Take a look at it. And then there is the final house, house 7, surrender. Once something heals, it can never go back to how it was before. It has a different beauty now. You have come through the ashes. Your heart is a champion with battle scars and exquisite tenderness that blooms in empathy for others. You have built strength and softness in healing. You have become someone new. Yeah, I think a lot of us try to rush into this house. And this is a house that we, you know, we might spend some moments in. We might walk into the front hallway, look around. It's really different when you're really ready to move in. You'll know it's not something that you can force. The healing priorities in house 7, embracing new ways to love, falling in love with yourself again, honoring your capacity to love and to heal. You know, if you've, that first love before heartbreak is a very particular kind of love, because if we're young, if we're innocent in the ways where we don't know what the loss feels like. But man, that second time, third time, seventh time, 18th time falling in love, when you know how bad it can get, you know, maybe you have had an excruciating breakup or series of heartbreaks. You know how bad it can get. You know how destroyed you can feel, but how much of an impact that can have on your world when you're the person that you thought, the life that you thought you were building is changed, is gone. of course, there's lots of other life experiences where it has the, where you can map this onto or is similar. Anything that just sort of shakes up our ground, right? But in particular with love and relationships, once you've been through it, when you come through that again and you're open to loving again, it is such an incredibly beautiful experience. Maybe if you've never had that, I want to hold that dream for you, that is the kind of love that there's a, you know, it's not to compare them, but there's, you know, when you can love knowing what it feels like to lose, there's a different kind of courage and a different kind of bravery in that kind of love, a whole other kind of vulnerability in that kind of love. And that's what waits for you. So yes, those are the seven houses of heartbreak. I am very curious to know if you are currently living, renting, squatting in one of these houses, if they resonate with you, which ones are your favorite? Which ones do you favor? Are you curious about any of them? You can always email me, Danette@radicalcreativesanctuary.com. And if you would like a copy of your very own, those on my mailing list have a copy already, or if you're on my mailing list, you have an email buried somewhere in your inbox with your link to the Seven Houses of Heartbreak. If you are not on my list and would like your own copy of the Seven Houses of Heartbreak, just go to radicalcreativesanctuary.com. On the homepage, there's a big, beautiful image that says, "How broken is your heart?" There's a house there. It's very, very, very clear. You can sign up for my newsletter and receive your own copy of this to reference, to print out. And I find having a map helpful anytime. I love different stages, different frameworks. I love just remembering where I am. Like, especially for me, house six, right? It was like, oh, okay. Like, because otherwise, if you don't realize that you're in here, it's really easy to think that there's just something wrong with you, or that you're doing something wrong, or that someone else is doing something wrong. But when you have this map and you see these houses and you're like, oh, okay, it gives you that context of where you are and how you might be seeing things, right? Because if, you know, the reason, again, why I love the house metaphor is because, you know, you can just really immerse yourself in it, but you are not the house. And I want to really let that land with you. You are not broken. You are not a broken heart. You have a broken heart. You are in one of these houses of heartbreak, but you are whole. You are always whole. Okay. And did you know also that I do have a special coaching package that's just for navigating this material? And I am taking new clients in September. If this is you, if you've been going through a recent breakup, it doesn't even matter if the breakup was years ago. If this material, if this framework, the seven houses, has you curious, has you resonating, if this is the doorway into self-love for you, I would love to have a conversation with you. You can email me. We'll set up a call and we can talk about what you need to make this heartbreak a breakthrough without sacrificing or changing who you are. This isn't the pink sassy breakup book, nor is it a epic hardcover about past life regression. If you resonate with this material, if you resonate with my voice and my self-love philosophy, if I sound like the right support for you, I would love to hear from you. And lastly, I know more than anyone, or as much as anyone, that breakups are hard. They are hard, and they can shake us and definitely challenge our ideas of whether or not we are lovable. But you are still here, and you are someone worth loving. It all starts with you. Be patient with yourself and keep listening. There are lots more self-love pep talks coming your way on The Soft Shoulder. Take care of you.